This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll actually talk about one of the heroes from yesterday's game. This hero deserves his own segment, so we'll talk about him coming up in just a little bit. Today is a Red Monday. It is brought to you by Comcast. Appreciate them being a sponsor of today's show. I want to play this audio for you. This is from our conversation last week with Patrick Mahomes, and we asked him, what is his response to people who think that Le'Veon Bell has absolutely nothing left in the tank? Here's what the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs had to say.
I think it's going to help out a ton. I mean, obviously, Clyde has been playing his tail off and doing a great job, Darrell, as well. But having a guy that's that versatile, that's really had a lot of success in this league and that is hungry to come out there and prove the haters wrong, as they say. I'm excited for him to have that opportunity and be able to be another great weapon in this offense.
You watch a lot of film. What do you say to people that think Le'Veon is done?
I mean, they aren't watching the All-22. They're not watching the film. Because if you watch him, obviously with the Steelers, but even with the Jets, I mean, he was still out there making plays happen. And you look at that, they're getting those loaded boxes, and he's getting guarded by some of the best defenders on the team because that's how much of a weapon that he is. And he's still making plays happen. And obviously coming here, I mean, he's going to have better one-on-one matchups, and he's going to be a hard guy for the defenses to stop.
I was really impressed at the burst that Le'Veon Bell had yesterday, how quickly he was getting to the hole, and he just seemed rejuvenated. Like, you could tell that being in New York, playing around Adam Gase, being in that offense was sort of like a weight on his shoulder. He was running with ankle weights yesterday. We saw a Le'Veon Bell that was as fresh as he looked back in Pittsburgh. Now, is he going to get that level of usage? Is he going to be able to touch the ball as much? Probably not. But you want to talk about burst, a lot of the same traits that we saw back in Pittsburgh. Bell still got it.
Yeah, he looked good in limited opportunities yesterday, but we said that was going to be the case. So he had 6 carries for 39 yards. He had the 16-yard carry right out the gates, and that's when everybody went, all right, I'll take that. In the snow, by the way, and that's kind of the type of runner that he is, where he's very patient, right? He'll wait for the hole to develop, and that's exactly what happened. The hole developed, he hits it, and then he ends up with a 15 or 16-yard run, and he definitely serves a purpose for this football team. Now, the Chiefs didn't really lean on the running game yesterday at all. It was just kind of here, you take it or you take it. Edwards-Helaire had his fewest carries of the season. He had 8 for 46. He got in the end zone once. We mentioned Le'Veon Bell had 6 carries for 39. Hardman had one. DeAndre Washington had a couple, and then Chad Henne, when he got in there, had a couple, if you want to talk about the sack. So technically the Chiefs only ran the ball 18 or 19 times yesterday. This is a weird stat, man. So the Chiefs had 25 less plays in the game yesterday than did the Denver Broncos. And oftentimes you'll say, well, the team that gets more offensive plays and the team that has time of possession is usually the team that wins. And oftentimes I do feel that way. And then people text in, they're like, no, time of possession doesn't matter. Those people are beating their chest today because the Chiefs had 25 less plays. The Chiefs only had the ball for 24 minutes yesterday. The Broncos had it the rest of the game. And the Chiefs, there was really not any point in that game where I thought they were in any sort of danger.
No, they certainly weren't in a whole lot of danger. But back to Le'Veon Bell. So this stat here, I'll throw a one at you. So he carried the ball 264 times when he was with the New York Jets. He only had one carry where he carried the ball for more than 16 yards. He got two of those yesterday in very limited usage. If you had the opinion that Le'Veon Bell was done, you're wrong. If we're looking at yards per attempt and what he accomplished in the New York Jets, to me, you got a men in black flashy thing yourself, and you got to really chalk it up to the situation. You and I both thought coming into this game, we'll start to learn more about Le'Veon Bell. Is it the player or the scheme? Is it the player or the situation that he's in? I think we saw yesterday in very limited usage, Le'Veon Bell and his lack of production with the Jets had way more to do with Gase in the offensive line than it has to do with him as a player. He still has that pop.
What was that stat? Run that stat by me again.
He carried the ball 264 times with the New York Jets. He only had one carry that went over 16 yards in those 264. He had two of those carries yesterday for the Kansas City Chiefs. Two of them in six carries yesterday. It was way more the situation with Le'Veon Bell. That's not a situation offensively that you can flourish. I don't care if you're Robbie Anderson. I don't care if you're Quincy Enunwa. I don't care if you're Le'Veon Bell or Sam Darnold. Adam Gase is a destroyer. Ryan Tannehill, the moment that he got away from Adam Gase, has turned into a top five quarterback in the league. Yeah. Le'Veon Bell was running with ankle weights on when he was with the New York Jets. He comes to Kansas City in one game and already reestablishes the burst that he had with Pittsburgh. Bell was exactly what I thought he was going to be. He's still got something left in the tank. Is he throwing at 95, 97 the way that he was in Pittsburgh? No, but he can still touch 93 on the gun. He could still be really effective in the role I think the Chiefs are going to use him.
Yeah, I mean, That was a good usage, I think, of Le'Veon Bell yesterday. And I think that Le'Veon Bell, they can ease him into his role right now. It's not like they need him to be a feature back. He came here to kind of spell Edwards-Helaire. They weren't playing the best team in the league. They're not playing the best team in the league next week. In fact, they're playing the worst in the Jets. The week after that, they got a game they're going to be a big favorite in against the Carolina Panthers. So I do think that stat, though, is just so mind-boggling. I don't know what surprises me more about that stat, to be honest with you. It's my ADD kicks in mid-sentence. That you said that he's done it twice already in only six carries as a Chief. Like, that's very, very impressive. Or the fact that he wasn't able to do it in 264. You can't just blame the situation. You said he didn't have more than a 16-yard carry, not a 20-yard carry, not a 40-yard carry, not an 80-yard carry. In 264 carries, our boy could only, no wonder he got cut. I mean, what are you going to do with him? That's terrible.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do with him. And that's why he is one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Sure.
It did not work with the New York Jets. I do feel pretty confident that it's going to work here in Kansas City. Keeping it with the running game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we talk a lot about Edwards-Helaire ability in the open field. And we've certainly seen if you've got a one-on-one situation with Helaire against a linebacker or against a corner, you should feel pretty confident that Helaire is going to make a move, going to make a cut and be able to do something to avoid the tackle. We don't really talk about how tough of a runner that he is. And I thought the touchdown run early in the game was a really impressive run. Maybe it's just me reading way too much into it, but I think he's shown a different burst these last couple of weeks since the Le'Veon Bell stuff has sort of been in the atmosphere. I thought he ran incredibly hard against the Buffalo Bills and yesterday against the Broncos in the snow when you need to be a physical, grounded out kind of team. That touchdown run was as impressive as anything he's done so far. I think he's shown a different level of energy, a different burst since they picked up Bell.
No doubt. And we're creeping up kind of to the midway point of the season here. So roles are starting to be defined. The Chiefs are 6-1. So they're seven games into this thing. And I feel like with Edwards-Helaire, they're still trying to kind of figure out what the sweet spot is. Do we want to get in the ball a dozen times? Are we better with 20 or 25? Because those big games that he's had is when he's gotten the ball a lot. I think that now that they've got Le'Veon Bell, they need to kind of re-examine that situation because obviously the carries are going to be different. If the result's going to be 43-16 and you don't take any tread off the tires, one dude has eight carries, one has six, that's absolutely a perfect case scenario. But you're not always going to get that. But certainly both those guys serve a purpose on this football team.
And it's exciting to me to see how Bell's role is going to expand here in the couple of weeks. Like
Clyde too. I think Clyde out of the backfield, like the second half of the season is going to be much more involved than he's been so far.
Yeah. I don't really know how much more he can be involved. I mean, he's top five in the NFL at touches. Like, I just don't know if they're going to give it to him more as the season progresses, but I look at Le'Veon Bell and throwing it to him out of the backfield where I thought one of those plays, I thought Jeff Schwartz on Twitter really broke it down well, where if Bell was more familiar with the offense, Pat probably doesn't take a sack on that play. I look at the role of Bell expanding, especially if he still has something left in the tank. Like, I look at it as we could see a true 1A, 1B situation. We could see Bell get to the point where he's touching the ball 12 times. We already know what he can do out of the backfield in terms of throwing it to him, but he had way more burst and pop between the tackles than I thought he still had.
Yeah, and I think that now that the Chiefs saw that, they're going to say, okay, cool, versus the Jets, your old team, we'll give you twice the carries, go out there for 16 times, and I bet that he gets 80 yards and probably gets a goal line carrier too and finds the end zone. We'll break that down that game, I guess, if we have to later on in the week. The Chiefs are going to be just a massive favorite by the time that game kicks off. But what I was talking about Edwards-Helaire real quick out of the backfield, they don't really, I thought that he'd be more of a safety valve, and then he'd break off a couple of long plays, and really we haven't seen that. So he's only got, what is it, 5, 8, 11? He's got 16, 17 catches on the season, where I thought that he's on pace for less than 40. I thought he'd be a guy that might catch the ball 70, 75 times out of the backfield like he did in college. That's all I'm saying is I think now you've got a guy in Le'Veon Bell and in Edwards-Helaire where sometimes you can light him up at the same time. Because Le'Veon Bell, I mean, you can put him in the slot whenever you want to.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think we see this offense really start to evolve, especially as it gets colder. And if teams are going to continue to play the Kansas City Chiefs the way that they do defensively, I think we'll certainly see the evolution of how they plan on using Le'Veon Bell. Coming up next on a Red Monday brought to you by Comcast, we'll talk about a player who deserves his own segment. I'll tell you who it is. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
We're going to dedicate an entire segment to one individual. His name is Daniel Sorensen.
Empty backfield. Pass sideline. Pass intercepted. It's Dan Sorensen. A pick six. Dan Sorensen. Dirty Dan Sorensen. As Drew Locke throws a 50-yard pick six for Dirty Dan. The third pick six of his career in 16 against Drew Brees. And then against the Raiders, and now against Lee's Summit native Drew Locke. And the Chiefs get a defensive score for the second time this season.
Now, there is no member on the Kansas City Chiefs that is probably more polarizing than Daniel Sorensen. I am old enough to remember when every training camp, when every offseason, who was the player that you wanted to cut to free up some salary cap room? Yes, that person was Daniel Sorensen. And the Chiefs continue to keep him on the roster and continue to keep him on the roster and continue to give Daniel Sorensen opportunities. And the text line hated Daniel Sorensen for getting those opportunities. And you know what he did? He just continued to keep his head down and go out there and make plays.
That's a fake punt. They fake the right side and tackled short of the first down. Great play. Dirty Dan Sorensen would not be fooled.
You know that Super Bowl ring that Patrick Mahomes has?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have it without Daniel Sorensen. He wouldn't have it. Tyreek Hill wouldn't have that Super Bowl ring without some of the contributions of Daniel Sorensen. You remember how Michael Irvin called himself playmaker? That's what Daniel Sorensen should call himself, playmaker. Because we're only talking about Daniel Sorensen when he's out making big-time plays in the AFC Championship game against Houston when you're down 24-7 yesterday making pick sixes. Daniel Sorensen has a nose for the ball. I didn't know if that was Ed Reed or Daniel Sorensen yesterday. I didn't know if that was Deion Sanders or Daniel Sorensen yesterday. Every time he touched the ball, he's making plays. This segment is going to be dedicated to Daniel Sorensen. I might open up the phone lines here and let people sing and heap praises on Daniel Sorensen. He deserves it after the play from yesterday.
I can't tell if that's what you're doing, if you're being an ass, because Daniel Sorensen really has had a big impact on this football team, and he's made big plays in the playoffs. He's had interceptions at the end of the game. He had the pick six yesterday. Like, Daniel Sorensen, I don't want to call him a major impact player because this team has too many major impact players. There's got to be a Royals comparison. Smitty's Garage, Burgers and Beer, text line 913-576-7610.
You want to know who he is? Derek Fisher. That's who he is. Think about those Shaq and Kobe years. I'm sorry, Kobe doesn't have 5 rings without Derek Fisher being on the roster. Shaq doesn't have 4 rings without Derek Fisher being on the roster. I'm not calling him Mahomes or saying that he's Kelsey, guys that are going to the Hall of Fame, but you want to talk about a guy on your team that you want on your side and a guy that just has a knack for making plays. That's who he is. Like, at this point, it can't really be denied. Is he somebody that you want playing 60, 70 snaps and being your number one safety? Probably not. But is he a guy who, if he gets on the field for 55%, 60% of the plays, is he going to make a play? Is he going to make a big tackle? Like, we've just seen it happen too many times. AFC Championship game against the Patriots had an interception. Last year in the playoff game against the Texans, he made a play. Like, I don't know how many times Daniel Sorensen has to do this to at least justify why Andy Reid thinks so highly of him and keeps him around. Honest question. How many people on this team have been on the team longer than Daniel Sorensen?
Oh, nobody. He's been here since the Calvin Coolidge administration.
I'm saying, like, other than Eric Fisher, I'm being dead serious. How many people on the Chiefs that we say right now have been on the team longer than Daniel Sorensen other than Eric Fisher? That might really be the only one. Like, Andy really likes Sorensen, and it's easy to see once every three, once every four games why he does it. Like, think about how bad we talk about Ben Neiman. I can't think of one single Ben Neiman play that's made. Daniel Sorensen has his flaws. He has his deficiencies, no doubt. But we can at least name times where he stepped up and made plays, and he did so yesterday.
Yeah, I think he used to play in the same secondary with Rock Ross and Albert Lewis and Daron Cherry and those guys. He's been around for a long, long time, and he's one of those guys that if you don't have him, you'll start to realize the impact. I mean, he's got a nickname, and he's probably the 30-something, 40th best player on this football team. Even after, I mean, every time you see his grades from Pro Football Focus, it's like, hold on, Dan Sorensen, and we still talk about him every single offseason. Is he an expendable piece? But he's got the nickname Dirty Dan. And I used to, back in high school, I remember, dirty was part of my genre, part of my slang, if you will. I used the word sick to describe when something was good. Oh, man, that's sick. I'd usually put a bro before, bro, that's sick. And I would say something is dirty to describe it when it's really, really good. And that's what Dirty Dan was yesterday. I mean, he was absolutely a difference maker in that football game.
Text line 913-576-7610. Dirty Dan is a football gym rat. If you hoop, you know what I'm talking about. That's exactly who Daniel Sorensen is. Like, I don't know who that player is in KU, but the guy that, you know, he is Kevin Young. Guy can do a little bit of everything. He can block shots. He can rebound. He take charges when need to. He'll get you 8, 4, and 2, but they'll be the right 8. They'll be the right 4 rebounds. He'll make the right pass in that scenario. I just want to point out, I think it's obvious the deficiencies of Daniel Sorensen, but that's not a player that you're counting on. He's not your stars. You're not ultimately winning and losing games because that guy's on your roster. But you want to talk about a guy who finds himself at the right place at the right time and in critical moments. It's a lot like what Sammy Watkins does, where we talked a lot about Sammy Watkins' contract and how he maybe wasn't a $16 million player.
Who? I forgot that guy was on the football
team. But Sammy Watkins can make a play on 3rd and 3 in the Super Bowl to help you move the chains and be part of the reason that you need. You know, the Patriots always talk about doing your job. That's exactly what Daniel Sorensen is. Right place, right time, smart play that helps the football team.
How many streets in America do you think Daniel Sorensen can walk down in street clothes and people have absolutely no idea he's an NFL player?
A bunch of them.
Almost everyone. Think you walk down the plaza and some people might not know who he is?
Like, yeah, some people.
Daniel Sorensen, I think that's why people kind of like him. He's literally the most every man that I've ever seen, whether you're talking about physical stature, the way he carries himself, the way he talks behind a microphone. We were privileged to go down the Super Bowl down in Miami, and we got a lot of one-on-one interviews. And I remember I was next to, like literally right next to Daniel Sorensen and Tyrann Mathieu, and the size of both those guys being on this defense. I'm always like, how does a Calvin Johnson come across the middle and these dudes hit him? But that's the epitome of, I think, why a lot of people have fallen in love with Daniel Sorensen over the years. He's been around for a long time. He's made a lot of big plays, and he's just a relatable dude.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about my favorite player on the team. But before we do that, Sean, I've got a toss-up question to ask you.
Okay.
Now, I can't take credit for this. Let me give credit to the text line. We have a toss-up question. What piece of audio do you like more? Is it the future MVP Russell Wilson?
Hey guys, Russell here. Yes, the typical boring, yes, Russell, the robot Russell, the one you guys love to know. Real exciting. You know, I'm real excited. But anyways, everybody has to have an alter ego, right? And I've been thinking about what my alter ego would be, and I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you gotta be unlimited. You know, you gotta have a thought process of being unlimited. So when people ask you, you know, what you're thinking about or what you want to do in life or where you want to go, you got to be unlimited. Tell them I'm unlimited.
You got to tell them that you're unlimited. So is that better or is this better?
I have a different voice for my dogs. It sounds like this.
Hi, Anky Nashy. Daddy's home.
Do you have a different voice for your dogs?
I don't think so necessarily. I know Brittany does, but I don't know if I have a voice, but who knows, man. I'm just trying to go out there and have fun with them, so I don't know yet.
Text line 913-576-7610. Sean, we'll let you get the first vote on the toss-up. What's better, Doggy Daddy Sean or Mr. Unlimited? I just want to say it again. Mr. Unlimited.
Man, if I had a dime for every time that I've been compared to the future MVP Russell Wilson, I'd now have a dime.
Mr. Unlimited.
His went longer, so I would say that it was more painful. And you got to understand, we do 20 hours of live radio a week together. So there's going to be some hits. There's going to be some misses. Let's say that I asked Patrick Mahomes to do his doggy voice and he feels more comfortable because I gave him mine. And then he comes out because people have talked about Pat's voice in the past. It's not a hidden subject. And if he came out and gave us a different voice and all of a sudden he sounded like Barry White or something like that, it'd be the biggest story. They'd start SportsCenter with it tonight. So I shot my bullet and it didn't hit the target. But I'm gonna say Russ's was both very cringeworthy. Like, I wouldn't mind never hearing either one of them again, but I think Russ's is worse because it was longer.
Oh, the dog voice is staying forever.
I have a different voice for my dogs. It sounds like this.
Hi, Hanky Nashy, Daddy's home.
Do you have a different voice for your dogs?
I mean this in all seriousness. I'd much rather you do the Jar Jar Binks voice for the entirety of the show than ever hear your dog voice ever again.
You don't want that.
Like, I never, ever want to hear the dog voice again. Ever want to hear it again.
If that's going to become like a part of the lexicon of the drive going forward, then I think we need to officially retire. We don't need to play it. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. The time that I teased the tornado. Remember when the weather...
No, you know what? If that's the trade we're making,
yeah,
we'll never play the tornado.
Yeah, the storm machine, the weather machine is officially retiring.
Hey, there's a touchdown in Overland Park. I'll tell you where. Stick around next.
Yeah, it's a tease. It's called a tease.
You have my word. I will never bring it up again as long as we're allowed to continue playing this.
I have a different voice for my dogs. It sounds like this.
Then Sean gets into character. That's my favorite part.
I have a different voice for my dogs. It sounds like this.
Hi, Hanky Nashy. Daddy's home.
Do you have a different voice for your dogs?
Listen to Mahomes here.
For somebody that doesn't like this, you should play it a lot.
I don't think so necessarily. I know Brittany does, but I don't know if I have a...
I don't know.
I knew I was going to get one of two answers. I was going to get that one, or I was going to get something great. And I got that one.
Mr. Unlimited. Coming up next, we'll talk about my favorite player on the team, and it is not Patrick Mahomes. I'll tell you who it is. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
I'm not going to lie to you guys. I've been waiting for this segment all day. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Now, I understand that I haven't been too good at Survivor these last couple of years, so people discredit my football opinions. You know what? That's just part of the business. I understand it. I accept it for, let's not kid ourselves here, me being really bad at Survivor these last couple of years. But sometimes I have such a foresight and a vision that people should listen to me.
I mean, I feel like you're being too hard on yourself. You did win one game in the last 2 years.
Now, last week on this show, I kindly asked you if I could borrow your idea for the list, right? Mm-hmm. I borrowed the list. I didn't come up with the list idea. You came up with the list idea. I asked you if I could use the list, right?
Yeah.
And then I made a list. So this was my list of players that the Chiefs should never throw the football to. Guess who was on the list? That's my list today. Those are the three people currently on the Chiefs they should never throw the ball to under any circumstance. That is my Demetrius Harris list. That is my Leonard Pope. That is my John Baldwin. That is my Snoop Menace list. Do not throw these three individuals a football. Darwin Thompson, I got no problem with you getting two or three carries and playing special teams, but you know what you should never be involved in? The passing offense. Ricky Seals-Jones, your season should end with one target, one drop. Don't throw him the football anymore. And I swear to you, if they throw the ball to Nick Kizer again, I'm going to break the television. It's already time to get one. Black Friday's coming up. I'm getting my PlayStation 5 here in less than a month, so I'm due for another TV. If they throw the football to Nick Kizer again this season, I promise you I'm breaking my television. So I'm sitting there. One of my really good friends is over, and we're watching the Chiefs game, right? And the Chiefs are on offense. It is a passing play. They throw the ball. Now, they can't be throwing it to Darwin Thompson because he's inactive. They can't be throwing it to Ricky Seals-Jones. He's inactive. Who do they throw the football to? Nick Kizer. Now, Nick Kizer, shockingly, catches the football. But you know what? Good things don't last that long. He then runs for about 5 yards. The Broncos, doing their scouting report, are clawing at the ball because they threw the ball to Nick Kizer and he fumbled. Now, I ask this, and I'm being as genuine as I can be. What's Nick Kizer's role on the team? did it look like he was an adequate blocker in the game? Like, I know today it's a Red Monday and they won and Halloween's coming around, so we're in a good mood. So I'm not going to talk too much about the offensive line. But yesterday, priority number one was blocking Bradley Chubb. And it was like the Chiefs never checked the scouting report that Bradley Chubb was really good. There was one play, I don't know why they did this, Nick Kizer's man was Bradley Chubb. Nick Kizer looked like me and you trying to block Bradley Chubb in that scenario. He looked like Roger Dorn from Major League playing Olay. Mahomes is getting killed. Nick Kizer's like, oh, I'm sorry. He's like reaching out like he needs help. And then they throw him the football. He then fumbles it. What's Nick Kizer's role on the team? How did I see this? How many NFL games have I coached? Zero. How many NFL games has Andy Reid coached? Hundreds of them. He's one win away from being the fifth winningest coach in the history of the NFL. If little old Carrington Harrison on the radio can see that you should never throw Nick Kizer the football, how do the Kansas City Chiefs not see it? Of all the people that are on the team to throw the football to, why are they throwing the ball to Nick Kizer? Enough. I let you do it for 2 weeks. He had a 3rd and 20. He batted it down like he was playing D-back for the team. They gave him the ball another time on a screen play. It was 3rd and 10. He got -2 yards on it. They then throw it to him again. He then fumbled the football. Stop throwing Nick Kizer the football. I don't know how much more clear I need to be. Never throw that individual the football again.
I can't believe they threw it to him again after the fumble. I mean, we know, just ask LeSean McCoy, if you put it on the ground, there's a good chance that we don't see you the rest of the game or the rest of the season. And Nick Kizer, it feels like he was a guy where the leash probably wasn't very long to begin with, and he fumbled. I figured that was it. We'd never talk about him or see him again. And then he made another play at 2 catches for 36 yards. You always tell me that the definition of a hater is to see somebody succeeding and then to still talk bad about him, to still try to hold him down. We talk about who's going to step up, right? In the absence of Sammy Watkins, who's it going to be? Who's going to have a couple of catches? Who's going to have 35, 40 yards? Why are you hating the guy Nick Kizer who did that? Why aren't you talking about DeMarcus Robinson, who had 1 catch for 4 yards? Why aren't you talking about Marcus McCole Hardman, who had 2 catches in the game?
McCole Hardman actually played well yesterday.
Yeah, but we've set our standards at this point pretty low. We're all talking about, hey, great, because he had 2 catches for 57 yards. He was targeted twice. Like, why are we hating on a guy that's gone out there and actually produced?
Because I know what DeMarcus Robinson's role is on the team.
What?
DeMarcus Robinson's not going to be a high-volume guy. They don't use him in that way. But if
why
they
can't
need
Nick Kizer
to
be DeMarcus Robinson?
But he's not talented enough to be DeMarcus Robinson,
sure?
Is the answer to the
Are
question.
You sure?
Yes, I'm 1,000,000% certain, okay, that is the case. I wouldn't be shocked if Nick Kizer isn't on the team by Friday.
Oh, I
know
either.
DeMarcus Robinson is going to be on the team on Friday.
I didn't know he was on the team until last week.
Let's not kid ourselves. This team is actively looking for who that second tight end is going to be. And Nick Kizer's not the answer. Nick Kizer might be a great individual. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's a great family man, probably goes to church, raises his kids. I'm sure he is a dynamite player, a dynamite person. But in terms of throwing him the football, stop it. Like, how many more times do we need to see this? Nothing good happens when you throw Nick Kizer the ball. What they're doing is the targets that they had planned for Anthony Sherman, who could catch the football, they're now giving to Nick Kizer. Stop it. Give it to somebody else. Give it to McCole Hardman. Give it to Tyreek Hill. Give it to Travis Kelce. Give it to anybody else other than Nick Kizer. I don't want to see it again. This conversation that we're having today, for now the second Monday, last Monday they threw it to him. It was terrible. I then told you. Now another Monday. I don't care if they're playing the New York Jets. I don't care if they were playing the team from Friday Night Lights. I don't care who they're playing. Don't throw Nick Kizer the football.
Is it because
anymore.
He fumbled? Because he had a pretty good game. And to get the targets, you got to be open. Is it because he dropped the ball? Is it because he fumbled?
Yes.
Okay, fine. I mean, because he's not, if that's your stance, but you were talking about this going into the game.
Yeah, and last week, they threw him the ball on a screen play, and he got -2 yards. The other time before that, I thought he had the biggest drop in the game. It was a 3rd and 20 against the Raiders, the only game that they lost. If Nick Kizer catches a football that hit him directly in the hands, then what are we doing here? Stop it.
I bet Nick Kizer hasn't got bashed like this since middle school out there on the playground.
Stop it.
Nick Kizer's just taking a beat down here.
I actually went on
What's
his
your problem with Nick Kizer.
I actually went on his stats page and looked at what he did in high school. He only had 19 catches his senior year. Even his high school football coach knew not to throw the ball to Nick Kizer. But now the NFL's throwing it to him. Stop it.
Something must have happened. You just looked at the numbers. I'm sure he got injured or decided to play basketball or something.
I don't know. I'm telling you, I looked at his senior year. They threw the ball to him 19 times. He's already been throwing the ball 7 times this year in the NFL. Stop it.
I don't know where the hell it came from. I had to look it up. Grand Valley State, it's his first year. He's a big boy, 6'4", 251. You do you, Nick Kizer. Don't listen to this guy. Just
I promise you,
keep
that's it.
Keep it open and hold on that football.
I won't talk about it again. I'm happy I got it all out of my system. Just stop it.
Nick Kizer about to turn into Antonio Gates right in front of us.
I'd be really happy if this team maybe traded a 6th-round pick or a 7th-round pick and went out there and found a blocking tight end to help the offensive line. I don't think that person's Nick Kizer. And if it is, just stop making him part of the passing game. That's all I'm asking. I feel like it's a very easy request, a very simple request. I don't think I'm asking a whole lot. I just don't ever want them to throw the ball to Nick Kizer again. Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk about this weekend in the NFL. I want to play this audio for you guys because I heard you, I heard BK, I heard the text line, I heard all of you bash this individual.
Just watch how smooth and in command he is of this offense.
So from the 12-yard line, they begin. As it is intercepted to start the game.
Seeing ghosts.
That's not good.
79 Brooks has no idea who came inside of him. Got to be more aware of that when you're the guard.
I heard all of you guys.
Did you hear what the man just said?
I heard all of you guys.
You can't say that.
Mock Booger McFarland relentlessly. I sat there on social media. I looked at the text line. I sat across from you, and all you guys did was put Booger McFarland down. And you know what? Maybe Booger wasn't the best, but Booger tried his hardest. He went out there every day and put his best foot forward. I want you guys to have that same amount of energy for Jay Feely. Because Jay Feely is worse than Booger McFarland was. I have now seen 3 games this year where Jay Feely has been the commentator. I'm here to tell you that Jay Feely's terrible. I was watching a game. I can't remember what game it was. It was a couple of weeks ago. The team decided to go for 2 up 7. They decided to go for 2. And Jay Feely before thought it was a great idea. And then they didn't get it. And then he's crushing the idea saying he wouldn't have done it. Like, what? I just heard you before that. So we were just talking about Daniel Sorensen earlier in the day. Daniel Sorensen had that pick 6. Listen to what Jay Feely had to say after the play.
Now that interception, I don't think it wasn't a bad throw by Drew Lock or even a bad read. It was a really good play by Daniel Sorensen, understanding the situation, jumping the route. Those kind of things are going to happen.
Bro, what is Jay Feely talking about? That throw from Drew Lock, they got pick 6th. It wasn't a bad throw or bad read. What was it? It looked like both of those things to me. Jay Feely's worse than Booger McFarland ever was. So for all the jokes you got out about Booger McFarland, I want you to transfer all of that energy towards Jay Feely, who is equally as terrible.
Here's the thing. I think that he's the best analyst of all time for kickers because it's a very, very short list. In fact, I can't really – can you guys think of another one? Surely there's been another one at some point. Rob,
he's
hit
not
the
even,
Google machine.
He's not even the best special teams guy right now that's a media guy.
But for kickers, this is very, very limited. Like, did Jan Stenerud ever have a couple of years on CBS or something like that? Because, yeah, I mean – Jay Feely, I never really wanted to hear what he had to say about football.
He's
because,
terrible.
Because he was a kicker, and he's not funny, and he's not interesting, and he's not accurate. And what he said yesterday, speaking of accuracy, on the play that he's talking about, it was a good play from Daniel Sorensen, but it was also a bad read and a bad throw.
It was
all those things from Drew Lock.
I'm just saying is all the energy that you guys had for Booger McFarland, I just want you guys to transfer some of that energy towards Jay Feely, because Jay Feely is equally as bad as this guy was.
Listen, all these Diva wide receivers wanted to go to the bathroom. As a defensive lineman, we didn't go to the bathroom. You sat on the bench, did your business, and you got up. Well, these are the type of plays that historically have gone against the Vikings. The Minneapolis Miracle. Plays that are fluke plays that went against this team. I'm sure Vikings fans are saying it's about time we get one of these plays to go our way. When you look at Kelvin Benjamin, guys, he's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end. It's cool outside, and as a player, you're thinking, you know what, I don't need to drink much water. Mm. And as a player, you actually need to drink more when it's like this because your body still sweats the same.
It's so true.
Also in the game is an extra offensive lineman. So I think they're bringing an extra lineman in the block.
Took that hit just moments ago from Tracy Walker. He went to the medical tent. And now they will take a look at him back in the locker room.
I'm glad he's okay, but that was still a terrible call against Tracy Walker.
I'm telling you that Jay Feely is worse than Booger McFarland. He really is. He makes Booger McFarland seem like John Madden. Maybe Howard Cosell. That's how bad that I think Jay Feely is. So all you guys that made jokes at the expense of Booger McFarland, sometimes you get what you ask for. You guys all wanted Booger gone. enter the ring is Jay Feely.
How do you not, and I'm not just saying this because we're now the official partner of the Chiefs. I've been doing this for years, long before we were. How do you listen to that broadcast and not turn it down and sync your TV up with the radio? It's so, so much better.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll get back to talking about the Denver Broncos and Drew Locke and where he currently sits among quarterbacks in the AFC West. But there were a lot of big-time games this weekend in the NFL. Let's recap some of them.
Well, as you guys know, on Friday, we called this weekend opinion-changing weekends in the NFL, and most of the games lived up to the hype. So I want to know, what is your opinion now on the teams that played an opinion-changing weekend? We will start with the Niners, who gave the absolute beats to Cam Newton and the New England Patriots.
I think this told us a lot more about the Patriots, actually. Like, the Patriots at the beginning of the year, remember, they were, what, 2-0, or they were 2-1, and they had the close game with Seattle, and we all said, okay, maybe it's not the Bills' division. And now, look, I mean, they've been without their quarterback for a couple of games. Even now that he's back, he was just putrid yesterday. And now they're 2-4 and fighting for their playoff life. So it tells me that the 49ers are kind of what I thought they were. Like, they're a good team, but I don't think they're a team that's going to go to three or four Super Bowls as they were assembled last year. I think they're a playoff team that gets knocked out early, but I don't know if the Patriots even get to the postseason.
I think you got to give San Francisco, though, a lot of credit with sort of how they battled with all the injuries. Like, if we made a power rankings of the top 10 players on San Francisco, I mean, six of those guys are hurt so far this year. They're doing it without their starting running back. They're doing it without their best defensive player in Nick Bosa. Like, I give San Francisco a lot of credit, especially in that division, and finding themselves now at 4-3. I mean, their schedule now gets really, really tough. These are the next three games for San Francisco. At Seattle, Thursday night football against Green Bay, and then at New Orleans are the next three games for San Francisco. Really hard to keep treading water. I eventually think that the injuries are going to sort of run its course for San Francisco. But let's give Kyle Shanahan a lot of credit for what he's done so far this season. I actually think that Kyle Shanahan should be in the coach of the year conversation. When you look at the AFC in relation to New England, I think we know that there's five teams that I would say are locks to make the playoffs. Kansas City's going to make the playoffs. Buffalo's going to make the playoffs. Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and Baltimore. That's five teams. There's now two spots that are open here. So either Baltimore or Pittsburgh are going to win the AFC Central. The other team's going to grab a wild card spot. And then you got to think about those other two wild card spots that emerge. Indianapolis is in that conversation. Las Vegas is in that conversation. Cleveland is in that conversation. Is it safe to say that New England is no longer in that conversation with the way that they played and the quarterback play they currently have? I don't know how you think that team's going to win nine games this year. I think you got to eliminate New England from the conversation, where it's funny, after that game against Seattle, we had them in the conversation, maybe being that second best team in the AFC. Now they're clearly on the outside looking in terms of making the playoffs.
We continue on with the Titans and Steelers. The Titans game was scared late, but the Steelers were able to hold off the Titans for a 27-24 victory as Steven Gostkowski missed another field goal. Sean, how has your opinion changed on either or both of these teams?
Not a bunch, because so they were the last two undefeated teams coming in. As you just said, Rob, it came down to the end of the game when Gostkowski missed what would have been a game-tying field goal. The Steelers were the much better team in the first half when they were up 24-7. The Titans were the much better team in the second half when they outscored the Steelers 17-3. It's kind of the game that I expected to see, where it wasn't really back and forth per se, but it was close until the very end. And I think because they had the momentum, if the Titans can make that field goal, they probably end up winning that game. But of course, now the Steelers are the only undefeated team left in the AFC. See, that game definitely lived up to what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that game should have went to overtime, and then it's a coin flip game to decide who wins. I think the bigger takeaway is probably about Tennessee and where their defense stands. So Miami is first in the NFL on opponent third down conversion at 31%. Tennessee is last. They are giving up 61% of third down conversions. 61%. Their last three games, it's at 69%. Nice. I just don't know how we can legitimately put you in the same conversation as Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City if you can't get off the field at third down. I may be coming around a little bit on Tannehill. I don't really think he was the problem yesterday. Henry didn't have a great day, but Tannehill certainly kept you in it. The problem was, I mean, Pittsburgh just converted every single third down. It didn't matter if it was third and short. It didn't matter if it was third and long. Like, they converted on third downs. It's hard to win in the NFL, obviously, if you can't get off the field. And that Tennessee defense just can't get off the field on third down.
we continue on with a game that kind of shocked me as the Bucks absolutely smoked the Raiders on Sunday afternoon. Tom Brady looked incredible, and Rob Gronkowski looked very healthy again. Sean, how's your opinion changed after this game?
Again, if you listen to the show, you know that I'm not that high on Derek Carr and that I've been relatively high on Tom Brady. So I'm not all that surprised. Tom Brady had another huge game. He had 370 passing yards to go along with four touchdowns. And Derek Carr came back down to earth after beating the Chiefs. This is kind of what I expected. I didn't think there were going to be this many points. 45-20 was the final score. But, I mean, the Buccaneers have proven to be a real threat in the NFC because we always knew that it was going to come down to two things, but they were two major things. Can the defense keep up with the offense? And can Tom Brady not look like he did in the playoff game last year versus Tennessee, where he looked old and his arm was done? And so far, the defense, you could argue, has been the best in the league, and Tom Brady's playing like a top five quarterback, so the Bucs are a real threat.
I had my eye on that game a lot. The Chiefs were playing at the same time, but on the second TV, I had my eye a lot on that Tampa Bay and Vegas game, and kind of flipping back and forth between that and Jacksonville and Los Angeles. I actually think that Vegas made a mistake late in the ball game. So they had a 4th-and-3 deep in Tampa Bay territory, and they decided to take the 3 points and then go back and play defense and be down 4. Tampa Bay then scored on that possession and then go up by 11 points, which effectively ended the game. They then didn't convert on their next play. They then scored, and the game got sort of out of hand there. I think if you go back, Vegas probably goes for it on 4th down. But the story is about Tampa Bay. As much as I hate admitting that I was wrong in this category, Brady still has a lot of juice left. Now, we'll see if he still has that juice left at the end of November and December, but I was looking at the way they were using Scotty Miller yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, are these the kind of routes, are these the kind of plays they're now going to give to Antonio Brown? Like, if Brown has anything left in the tank and Gronk is sort of easing his way back into it, Tampa Bay is a lot scarier than I gave them credit. I think they're a top 3 defense in the NFL. You can maybe argue top 2 with Chicago, but if this offense is going to produce at the level that a lot of people thought they were going to produce at, you got to look at Tampa Bay as being a legitimate title contender.
Brady's thrown for 1,900 yards, 18 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. I bet New England wishes they hadn't let him go.
Our final game from Opinion Changing Weekend, the Cardinals and Seahawks on Sunday Night Football. The Cardinals late in overtime got the victory. Sean, what's your opinion on these teams now?
Bird Gang, what a great game that was. And again, I knew that it was going to be close. I figured it would come down to the end, and it came down to the very, very end. If you remember, for Levine's locks, I said that if you had the brass, you don't need to take the 3.5 points. Go ahead and play the Cardinals on the money line, which I did. How about that, Bird Gang, last night? And I think that the Cardinals might be a real threat to win that division.
Yeah, they certainly are a threat to win the division. I mean, I think the story is about the defense for Seattle, and their defense is bad. Like, there really ain't no other way to put it. Like, their defense, can you win with this defense? There are only 3 teams in the NFL who have given up more yards this season than Seattle, and it's a little bit different because Seattle has only played 6 games. These other teams have played 7 games. The only teams to give up more yards than them defensively are Houston, Jacksonville, and Atlanta, 3 bad football teams. Seattle is giving up an average of 479 yards defensively and 29 points a game. Can you win a Super Bowl with the defense that bad? I feel like Seattle's in the same place that Kansas City was back in 2018. Now, maybe Wilson isn't playing at the same level that Mahomes is, but there's no question in my mind that Seattle can score against any team in the NFL. They can score 30, 40 against anybody in the league, but they also can give up 30 or 40 or 50 against anybody in the league. Kyler took advantage of that defense all day, had one of his best days as a pro. Seattle's going to make the playoffs, but we got to ask, can you be a legitimate title contender with a defense that bad?
Russ's number is not too far off right now from Pat's MVP season, but you're right. It does remind me a lot of that team where they can score with anybody, including the Chiefs. The question is, can they stop anybody?
Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk about a quarterback on the very opposite end of the spectrum of Russell Wilson. We'll talk about Drew Lock and how he finds himself dead last in the AFC West in terms of our quarterback power rankings. But let's talk a little bit of special teams. You have a theory regarding one, Harrison Butker.
Yeah, going into the game, I remember you said that one thing that they got to shore up is the extra points because at some point it's going to cost them.
They missed another one yesterday.
And they missed another one. And again, it didn't cost them because the Chiefs ended up dominating that game. I wonder if I'm on an island here. And if this is completely idiotic, then tell me, but I'm being totally serious. 913-576-7610. Who's the holder? The punter.
Tommy Townsend.
Tommy Townsend, right? Tommy Townsend has done a great job with the holds. If you watch the slow motion, that's not the problem, right? He's getting in. It's not brain surgery, right? You catch it and you put it down like they like, and maybe a little bit of an angle and laces out and you're done. Well, his hair. his hair. And it's not like he's got it up like in a man bun where it's stuck up in the helmet, or it's not like, I mean, we're talking about it coming out from every single direction where if you watch the hole, I'm telling you, maybe it's just my OCD and I know I'm a little bit weird. I would be distracted. There's long, beautiful, luscious, dark locks coming down literally inches away from both sides of the football. I don't know if you can do this, but I might ask old boy to shave his head, because the last thing that I want to see is, because it's not like the kicker's going to come out and say it. It's not like the kicker's going to come out and say, yeah, no, I'm distracted and you got to cut your hair. You would never say that type of thing. You would just compliment him and take the blame himself. So am I the only one? Because yesterday when I saw the hole, I'm thinking to myself, that's a whole lot of hair to be involved in this whole extra point thing.
913-576-7610. What is you guys' theory about Harrison Butker? He has missed 5 extra points in the Chiefs' 7 games so far this season. I know it has not hurt them yet, but it seems hard to me to believe
it's
that you can keep missing all these extra points and at no point it doesn't come back to bite you. I remember Bill Cowher said this, and I'm a firm believer. Your weaknesses are what get you beat in the postseason. One of their weaknesses is extra points. Like, I've never heard this to be a weakness of a team, that you don't trust your kicker to consistently make extra points, but that certainly is a weakness. I was reading Arrowhead Pride earlier today, and they were saying that maybe Kansas City should take a penalty and kick the extra point from farther back to make them more comfortable. I mean, it is a 31-yard kick that they continue to miss game in and game out. It is a problem, their extra point special team situation. You're listening to a Red Monday brought to you by Comcast. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about Drew Lock, who finds himself dead last among quarterbacks in the AFC West. That's next. Stick around. It's The Drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.